We're returning to chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, and this is the chapter on developing steadfast wisdom, which we have the description of a sage established in higher wisdom, which we then are to see as a guide to our own practice. And so let's begin this time of Gita study by offering a prayer of gratitude to the divine source, indwelling Lord of love that permeates all that is. We give thanks to our teachers in this lineage of Kriya Yoga who have shined a bright light on this exquisite teaching to support our path of awakening. May our innate wisdom be ignited, and may that be the light that shines forth, guiding every step that we take. Om, peace, peace. Peace. So we ask ourselves again, how do we progress from having momentary or intermittent glimpses of truth and inspiration to being firmly established in wisdom? And this chapter gives us insight into this truth of our being. And how this spiritual truth can be actualized in our daily life through karma yoga and buddhi yoga, wisdom of guided action. So now we're exploring these verses that are about self mastery through control of the senses and purification of the mental field to remove seeds of desire and detachment and, that cloud our discernment. So most of us are aware of these seeds that come from the power of the senses and desire and are rooted in the mind to instigate action. Whether we believe this action is wise or not. And it's common in the human experience to find ourselves doing things that we know we shouldn't do or we don't want to do, and not doing those things that we do want to do, right? So these next verses in the Gita begin to unravel that mystery for us and to show us the way of self-mastery. And these initial teachings that I share are from teachings that were offered by Yogacharya O'Brien. These were originally recorded on April 12th of 2023. And then I'll follow on with a few comments before we have time for sharing. Self-mastery requires a clear, calm mind. So we ask, how can I choose wisely? How do we choose wisely if our thoughts are clouded, our emotions are turbulent, our discernment is lacking? How do we choose wisely? These verses are about cultivating the ability to take the peace of superconscious meditation with us into the activity of the world. Verse 58. When one withdraws completely the senses from the objects of the senses, as a tortoise withdraws its limbs into its shell, that person's wisdom stands firm. And verse 59. Sense objects turn away from the abstinent person. But the taste for those objects remains. But the taste also turns away from one who has seen the Supreme, who has seen God. Then, verse 60, the turbulent senses carry away the mind forcibly, O Arjuna, even of the striving person of wisdom. And verse 61, restraining all senses, disciplined, one should sit intent on me, intent on God. One whose senses are controlled, that person's wisdom stands firm. So, what is required for steady wisdom? You already know the answer to this. The skill of pratyahara, interiorization, control of the senses, the ability to withdraw attention inward, redirecting the flow of energy away from the senses and turning it within to meditate. And pratyahara is also the method for withdrawing our energy from sensory distraction when not meditating. Choosing where we invest our energy, learning to redirect our attention. It is the key to self-mastery, lower self, and self-mastery with a capital S. In his commentary on these verses, Yoganandaji lists three forms of self-control or sense control for the yogi. First, he says, when the five senses are withdrawn in the subconscious mind during sleep. Second, he says, or dissolved in consciousness during deep concentration. Or disconnected at any time at will in the conscious state by self-mastery or nirvikalpa samadhi. During sleep, subconsciously, during concentration, meditation, superconsciously, and through self-mastery. At will. So we become acquainted with and familiar with the peace of abidance in the self, the higher self, first through regular meditation and prayer, then by learning how to return to that state when we're active in the world, how to direct our attention and awareness within while living in the world. When we experience the peace of our inherent wholeness, desire does not trouble the mind. Nothing is needed, nothing disturbs us. There's a beautiful prayer by Saint Teresa of Avila that reflects this. Let nothing disturb you, let nothing frighten you. All things are passing away. God never changes. Patience obtains all things. Whoever has God lacks nothing. God alone suffices. And another Christian saint, Brother Lawrence, called this practicing the presence of God. Practicing the presence. It's a beautiful way to think about it. Again and again, meditating, eyes open. Just like when you're sitting in meditation and your mind wanders off, you bring your attention and awareness back to being aware of divine reality, back to having one pointed attention. Sidebar, whose life is this anyway? Okay, back to it. And this is the skill of pratyahara. It purifies our mental field. But also, as a result of pratyahara, or purification of the mental field, we're naturally drawn to that divine remembrance. We're doing it, and it's doing it to us. We can use our breath awareness throughout the day to quiet our thoughts and make a regular practice of that. Meditate all day, coming back to the breath consciously, dropping our attention into a spacious pause. And in that pause, remembering that this is a very simple practice. In that pause, when we meditate regularly to the point of superconsciousness, that piece of the soul that we experience during meditation will come back to us during the day, and it will arise on its own. We can't make it happen. But it's very helpful if we commit ourselves to those little pauses. Just stopping to breathe, to reflect, to reconnect to ourselves, and to pause often. It's necessary for us to renounce ego-driven or self-centered desire in order to have a calm mind. We have to let go of being right. If we're driven continuously by desire, we are in a state of forgetfulness. If we're living in that way, we cannot remember our true essence of being. And our life becomes very burdensome when we're in that mindset. So this is a way to return to the sweetness of the soul and the joy of the soul. But we might ask ourselves, is it even possible really to renounce desire? Right? Our lives are driven by desire in the simplest ways. Desire for air, for water, for food. But then all of the other complicated desires that we have as well. Desires for things, for people, and situations. So these verses analyze the impact of ego-driven desire, why it's necessary to understand it, and then how to free ourselves from its sway. There are two essential ways to finding freedom from being driven by sense desire, being forgetful of the truth of our being. So first, there's what is perhaps called the lower way, which is the way of abstinence and willpower, which is helpful but insufficient. It's not enough to simply try to restrain desire through willpower alone. In order to find freedom and be established in joy, we need a higher way, which is surrendered devotion to God. Both are needed. Renunciation, turning away from being driven by ego-centered desire, by restless desire, and the ability to remain anchored in the wholeness and fullness of our divine self. Both are needed. These are key components of Kriya Yoga practice, self-discipline, and self-surrender. So there are four practices for this. The first, you know, is discernment. Learning to see what is useful and what is not. What is going to lead to suffering or not? When we study Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, we know that when we look at what these modifications of the mind are, what our thoughts are, what our desires are, there are some that lead to suffering and some that lead to freedom. So we want to become skillful at discerning what is going to lead toward joy and what is going to lead toward sorrow. So on the spiritual path, we become sleuths. We investigate. We use our discernment. Where is this going to lead? Where is this line of thought and this desire going to take me? We want to awake that. Before coming to the spiritual path, most of us were asleep to that. We just wanted what we wanted when we wanted it. And perhaps we still find ourselves there from time to time. So then, secondly, is our commitment met with determination and our willpower, which is so strong. Paramahansa Ji encouraged us to use our wisdom-guided will and to affirm, this is what I will do that is in the highest good. This is what I will not do that is holding me back. Then we can begin to arrange conditions that are for our highest good. This commitment is deciding to be master of our own destiny. I like that. I am master of my own destiny. Not to be at the whim of restless desire. So, this second practice is using our wisdom-guided will to commit to freedom, to be strong yogis. And then the third practice is tempering that with devotion. So it isn't simply ego-driven desire, I'm going to do this, but wisdom-guided will tempered with devotion. No one has to explain to a lover that they must turn their thoughts to their beloved throughout the day. If you've ever been in love, you know that. You don't have to make yourself think about the one whom you love. The heart takes care of that. Jesus said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be." We develop devotion through attunement, through prayer and meditation. So we have cultivate discernment, commit to freedom, and develop devotion. And then the fourth practice is to keep surrendering. Keep surrendering. Keep letting go into divine reality. Keep letting go into God. Keep coming home to your divine self and remembering God is your life. Always present, always guiding you and supporting you. Keep coming home to that. And regarding these practices about sense control, the masters in our tradition of Kriya Yoga stress the efficacy and importance of Kriya Yoga pranayama. How important that is to being able to understand how to withdraw energy from the senses and turn that energy within. This is the way that meditation is taught in our tradition. And pranayama is the yogic method for controlling prana. Prana, or vital force, is this energetic runner that carries sensory stimulation through the brain and the mind. So, prana, this energy, moves the breath and it moves the mind. When the yogi begins to be able to direct prana or direct vital force, energy, able to reverse the flow from sensory involvement to enhanced inner awareness and perception, then superconscious meditation and higher states of consciousness are possible. Here's Paramahansa Yogananda's rendering of these verses that we are exploring. Verse 58, he translates as, "When the yogi, like a tortoise withdrawing its limbs, can fully retire its senses from the objects of perception, his wisdom, her wisdom manifests steadiness." In 59, a person who physically fasts from sense objects finds that the sense objects fall away for a little while, leaving behind only the longing for them. But the one who beholds the Supreme is freed even from the longings. And 60, Paramahansa G writes, "O Arjuna, the eager, excitable senses do forcibly seize the consciousness, even of one who has a high degree of enlightenment and is striving for liberation." There's our flashing red light. Take it seriously, O Arjuna. The eager, excitable senses do forcibly seize the consciousness, even of one who has a higher degree of enlightenment and is striving for liberation. The senses and the seeds of desire in the mind are powerful. But God is more powerful. Sidebar. It's so easy to get pulled off track, isn't it? We're on retreat. Everything is arranged for us. Some surrendered devotee decides to bake homemade bread. We smell the bread with our senses, and our mind, with the desire of a child, goes running toward it. Oh, wouldn't it be great if I throw a big slab of butter on this? Maybe some raspberry jam or a good slice of white cheddar cheese that is aged to perfection. I hope you're making you hungry. All the senses go running toward it. We smell it. We see the beauty of it. We see the divine chef surrendered, humming with joy. We hear them. But we know if we discern. I know. I'll speak for myself. I'm gluten free. If I eat gluten, it's not going to be happy later or tomorrow. I'm dairy free. Same thing. If I eat even a slab of butter, my body is not going to feel well. I'm not going to be able to meditate. I love raspberry jam, but I'm really not supposed to eat sugar or my body freaks out and I can't concentrate. Right? All the senses are running there. Wah, wah, wah. I did have a taste. We can have a little. But the senses want us to have the whole loaf. Okay, back to Yogacharya O'Brien's. I love that. It's a flashing red light. Take it seriously. The senses and seeds of desire in the mind are powerful, but God is more powerful. Yogananda writes for verse 61, one who unites their spirit to me, to God, having subjugated all their senses, remains concentrated on me as the supremely desirable. I really like those names of the divine that Paramahansaji would make. He capitalized supremely desirable. What is the name for God? Supremely desirable. More desirable than all the desires we have. The supremely desirable. Back to the sidebar. Do I desire liberation through deep meditation, calm body and mind, more than I desire the entire loaf of yummy, warm bread out of the oven? That's what we're asking ourselves. What is my supreme desire? Okay. Yogacharya concludes with this story from the Essential Rumi from Coleman Barks' translation. And she says, let's look at the story with regard to what it's like to follow the supreme desirable wisdom within it and what it's like to ignore it. It's a nice parable for us to think about. This is the story of the lake and the three big fish that were in it. One of them intelligent, another half intelligent, and the third stupid. Some fishermen came to the edge of the lake with their nets, and the three fish saw them. The intelligent fish decided at once to leave and to make the long, difficult trip to the ocean. He thought, I won't consult with the other two on this. They will only weaken my resolve because they love this place so much. They call it home. Their ignorance will keep them here. When you're traveling, ask a traveler for advice, not someone who laments and stays in one place. The wise fish saw the men in their nets and said, I'm out of here. So the intelligent fish made its way with a whole length of the fish as a moving footprint. And he suffered greatly on the way, but he finally made it to the edgeless safety of the sea. And then the half intelligent fish thought, oh no, my guide is gone. The intelligent fish is gone. I ought to have gone with him, but I didn't. And now I've lost my chance to escape. I wish I'd gone with him. So don't regret what has happened. If it's in the past, let it go. Don't even remember it. Go back to the second fish, the half intelligent one. He mourns the absence of his guide for a while, and then he thinks, What can I do to save myself from these men and their nets? Perhaps I'll pretend I'm already dead. I'll belly up on the surface and float like weeds float, just giving myself totally to the water to die before I die, as Muhammad said to do. So he did that. He bobbed up and down, helpless, within the arm's reach of the fishermen. Look at this. The best and biggest fish is dead, said one of the fishermen. He lifted him by the tail, spat on him, and threw him on the ground. And the fish rolled over and over quietly and slid secretly near the water and then back in to the small pond. And meanwhile, the third fish, the dumb one, was agitatedly jumping about, trying to escape with his agility and cleverness. And the net, of course, finally closed around him. And as he lay in the terrible frying pan bed, he thought, if I get out of this, I'll never again live in the limits of the lake. Next time, the ocean. I'll make the infinite my home. This is such a strong and powerful parable about making the infinite our home, not getting caught in the net of desire and confusion. So, next session, we have some very powerful verses on discerning the impact of ego-based desire and the attachment that accompanies it, what it is that causes us to give up our freedom and our joy. So clear and so much. So I have just a few things to add. I called this From Freedom, From Restlessness to Restraint, Kriya Yoga and the Power of Inner Mastery. Even a wise person who strives to control the senses is carried away by them forcibly, O Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 60. In these verses, the Gita addresses the universal human challenge, how to live with clarity and inner freedom in a world that constantly pulls at our senses, especially when we're trying to live a higher life. And verse 60 reminds us that even the disciplined person, the seeker on the path, us, even we can be pulled off course by the senses if we're not paying attention. And then verse 61 urges us to restrain our senses through steady meditation and attunement. And verse 62 reveals the danger of unchecked desire, which begins with sensory contact and then leads to attachment, then desire, anger, delusion, and ultimately destruction. Just think about your own life. When you have an intense attachment to something, it eventually leads to desire for it. It's not permanent, so we're not going to get it or we're going to lose it in some form. Then we feel angry, deluded, and ultimately destructed. These teachings, I think, are especially meaningful for us today. You know, we live in this world of hyperstimulation and polarization, where media and technology and consumerism are constantly a crisis narrative that we have that weaponizes our attention. As individuals and a society, I think we're suffering from what Yogananda called restlessness of the senses. This inner disquiet that leads to division and fear and despair. From the perspective of Kriya Yoga, this restlessness is not just moral or psychological. Importantly, it is energetic. Isn't that great? That means there's something we can do about it. In ourself, there's something we can do about it. When our prana flows outward through the senses unchecked, we lose our spiritual awareness. If I eat the whole loaf of bread, I'm going to feel sick. I'm going to have to lay down and take a nap. I'm going to forget that I was actually supposed to be leading the retreat that I was at when the bread was made. But when we gather prana inward, we regain our spiritual clarity and our strength. It's really that easy. Roy Eugene Davis explains this dynamic tension in his commentary of the verses. Here are the cliff notes he gives us. When attention is extroverted and sense desires arise, emotional involvement and mental confusion usually result. Sensory impulses should be consciously regulated. Self-control is exercised by maintaining soul consciousness, not by using willpower to repress our desires. This is a vital distinction. We're not being asked to suppress our senses, but to transcend the tyranny by turning inward. Turning inward through our spiritual practice. Transcend the tyranny of the senses. Don't you love that? And verse 61 gives us the antidote. It says, having controlled them all, the senses, the yogi should remain firm, meditating on me. One whose senses are under control is known to be steadfast in wisdom. You know, in our practice, we find our seat, we become still and relaxed at the same time, we let our spine be straight so we can experience prana moving. We practice our pranayama, our kriya, or whatever pranayama we practice. We let our prana, we invite it to extend into, to move into the higher centers of mind and consciousness. And then we're magnetized. Our attention and awareness is eventually magnetized to experience the divine. And then we stop trying and we meditate in God. And this is the essence of Kriya Yoga, to restore the control of life force through interiorization. And some say this is the most important practice of this day and age, to restore awareness of God, of our divine self, through turning away from the external poles and remembering who and what we are, being anchored in that. So as we meditate, as we breathe consciously, as we live with spiritual intention, we anchor ourselves in our essence of being, in the true me in this verse, the divine indwelling reality, you know, the ever-present, never-changing source. This is possible. This is possible for you today. It's not like you have to wait until, you know, poof, some magic thing happens. It's possible. Yogacharya O'Brien Umaji, in Living for the Sake of the Soul, affirms this. She writes, Kriya Yoga is a path of returning energy to its source. When the senses are disciplined and prana is directed inward and upward through the spine, awareness becomes calm and expansive. Divine wisdom shines forth. That's what we want. So when we consider these times that we're living in, with wars, with injustice, climate upheaval, economic uncertainty, personal challenges, it may seem that this practice of restraining the senses is passive or disengaged, but nothing can be further from the truth. To be anchored in the divine self is the most powerful form of resistance to the chaos of the world. When we bring the light of truth into any situation, that situation is transformed. Now, it doesn't mean that we'll see transformation immediately right in front of us, right? It's just like our meditation practice. We have a deep meditation. It doesn't mean that we immediately see the results of that. We pray it's in our lifetime, but it might not be. It might be in the thousands of years in the yugas. So we take a broader view, but we do our part. And this gives us the ability to act not from compulsion and fear or some emotional reactivity, but from love and wisdom and spiritual purpose. We do what we know we should do. So during this week, you might consider reflecting on where our senses are dragging us into confusion or anxiety. Where are we being pulled externally? What desires have subtly shaped our perception of ourselves or of others? And most importantly, what does it mean to meditate on me? To center our awareness in the divine self. Even amid this swirling world, what does it mean to center our awareness? You know, this time calls us to recommit to our practice every day on the cushion and in the world, practicing the presence of God. As Umaji said, pause And then a little later, maybe a few minutes later, pause. I have a friend who has this practice of saying a short prayer every time before she walks up steps. You don't need to repeat this particular practice, but she just says Om Guru before she walks up steps. You might say God and Gurus before answering the phone or sending a text or an email or opening your mouth, especially with your spouse. This time calls us to recommit to our practice on and off the cushion, not only as a method for our inner peace, but as an essential way of engaging with a world that so needs awakened, soul-centered action now more than ever. So remember, you are not the senses, you are not the body. You are the ever-free, ever-radiant divine self. Withdraw the limbs, still the waves, and awaken the light within, and share that with all whom you meet. Om. Okay, that's a lot. Is very practical, huh? So, time for your questions, comments, ahas, oh-ohs. Yahoo.
We have our willpower, but just coming back to soul consciousness, that's the difference.
We have our willpower, but keep coming back to soul consciousness, Prabhama says. That's the difference. We have willpower, but keep coming back to soul consciousness.
I've been thinking about how can I think of God all the time?
How can I think of God all the time?
And that today helped me think about, oh, I like thinking about the breath, the pause, having some kind of practice that I do during the day
Yeah, I can
that's
think about the
meaningful.
breath and the pause and having a simple practice I can do during the day. Repeating it for them. Subhadra says. Mina, please unmute yourself. Thank you.
One of the things I found helpful, especially in today's world of deep concerns, is I remember what Yogananda said, when worries howl at me, I say, God, God, God. And that really has taken me into, deeper consciousness and letting go, practice of letting go. So that's been really helpful.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful prayer to even read every night. Or that prayer from Saint Teresa of Avila. It's a lovely short reminder. Could say that before you walk up the stairs. God, God, God. That's different than, oh God. Right? Unless you add beautiful after it. Bhavani.
Hi, thank you. Okay, so I throughout the day I get like a feeling, perhaps it's the movement of vital force or energy, like coming up the spine, or I'll hear Om very clearly. And the thing is, I'm like in the middle of a book or whatever. I don't want to stop and go into that, right? But the practice is for the last, I don't know, maybe it's been a month or a few weeks. Every time I hear it, if I can, I just stop. It is phenomenal. Like, then I have these crazy deep meditations, and because it's inviting me all the time. It's whether or not I'm going to listen. So I'm like, oh, is it going to be the ego today, or is it going to be following the guidance? That's there. It's grace. It's coming to me, and I'm like, no, I want to see what happens in the show. Can you imagine? Can you imagine turning that down? But sometimes I do. But this practice of not doing that, oh, transformative. So yes, thank you.
Beautiful. Yes, we all have that in some form, in some way. It's different for each of us. Umaji would talk about that, and if you have a regular mantra practice that you do regularly, the mantra will just start singing in your consciousness while you're reading a book. Yes, the inner book is much more important. And it's even more important than the meeting we're in. So sometimes we can be in both places, right? Or we can excuse ourselves. Oh, honey, I just need a pause. That's what I do. And then my spouse is like, but now there's an agreement. I just need a pause. Then the communication is much more sweet, right? Is that Cynthia?
Yeah. I've been meditating since the retreat in January every morning. And in March, I started doing it toward the end of the day or at 4 o'clock. What I'm finding is some clarity, and I'm seeing things and noticing things that weren't there before. Have I been ignoring these things? But what's wonderful is I'm finding myself, when I'm being naughty, I find myself, you're doing that. And I'm trying to learn patience, because I used to be patient and I lost it through the years. I bought two books on being patient, and I was too impatient to read them. But I went back to the first one, and now it's like, wow, brilliantly there. And so when I catch myself not being patient, I'm saying, whoa, patience. And it doesn't just mean waiting, it means to understand what is going on, to just scrutinize it. And it pulls me up, and I'm so happy with this. This is so wonderful meeting here, having all of you. It is awesome. Thank you so, 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 so much.
Thank you. Yes, to have those pauses with self-acceptance, knowing that grace is guiding us, and to be a sleuth, as Yogacharya O'Brien said, to be discerning and be a sleuth. And when we have regular meditation practice, especially when we can add an evening or an afternoon, some of us can't, but when we can, or practice the presence throughout the day, when we do that, as the Yoga Sutras tell us, our consciousness is transformed, awareness is purified, clarified, the samskaras, the mental impressions and modifications of the mind, begin to become like a calm lake instead of one with a bunch of ripples. And then we can see more clearly. Now, sometimes when this happens, we can become disappointed with ourselves, afraid. We can think that we're backsliding, but we're not. We're just becoming aware of what was always there, but we were reacting to. Now that we see it, we can choose to respond instead of reacting. And then it will become even more quiet and calm. And we can, as you said, discern how we want to respond in our life. But we have to take the pauses. We have to pause. It's the promise of the practice. Okay, we have time for one more before we conclude. Manisha, can you unmute yourself?
Here we go again.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for these, as you mentioned, these exquisite teachings. And speaking of the divine grace, somehow in the teachings, it just was like a light blinked on. The divine grace said that, and your emphasis on the pranayama. It was like, well, there it is, right there in front of you. The practice is so simple. You, as you breathe in consciously, you are going into God. And as you breathe out, you're expressing that. Just practice that. Something was telling me that the divine grace of these teachings. So thank you very much. There it is, just right. I don't have to go anywhere. It's just right here every time I breathe. When it's embraced as that gift, breathing in, breathing out, that God is right there. So thank you.
That is such a beautiful place for us to conclude. Breathing in consciously, we experience that God is there. Breathing out consciously, we take our next action in the world. God is right there. Let us take these teachings forth and, most importantly, continue to contemplate so your inner wisdom is revealed. You know all of this. You have all of this truth within. Om.
Thank you.